Well, thank you. Thank you especially, Cherry, for leading my favorite song. I don't know if you knew about that, but that is my favorite song. And good morning, everyone. I want to thank the committee for asking me to share with you, and for their prayers as I prepared, and for all the kind words and prayers from all of you, and I really appreciate that. Also want to thank the New Covenant Mennonite Fellowship Church family for extending such a warm welcome and generous hospitality to my son Andre and me. We are continually and abundantly blessed through the preaching of the word and the love you extend to us. I was really blessed last month with Billy's presentation on our identity with Christ. I could have listened longer to her ideas on the self-affirmation part and the fine line of deception that goes along with that. And I've been meditating on that quite a bit. And because you will be learning more about me today, I thought you may as well know that I'm generally an optimistic person who likes positive thinking. And that has gotten me into trouble at times. But Billy, she quoted a verse from John 15, which is negative. And personally, about our identity. And personally, I take a verse that's more positive from Acts 17:28. It says, "For in him we live and we move and we have our being." But Jesus and Billy were not afraid of negative statements. Jesus stated in John 15:5, and Billy referred to it, "Apart from me, you can do nothing." And so I've been meditating on what is nothing. All you can come up with is just nothing. You can't describe it. So now let me get going here. Today I want my story to be, I want my story to be, get used to this. Okay, to be a story of God's love and wonderful care for me and my family as we journey through grief. And I will say with David in Psalm 9, 1 and 2, "I will praise you, O Lord, with all my heart. I will tell of all your wonders," and I added to me. "I will be glad and rejoice in you. I will sing praise to your name, O Most High." Now, I won't be able to tell of all of God's wonders to me this morning, but what I do tell you about is praise from my heart. And I'll try to give you time for questions at the end of my sharing today for more clarity if needed, or for any pressing questions you may have that I haven't answered. We, all of us, have hardships. It's promised to us. Jesus said in John 16:33b, "In this world you will have trouble. But take heart, I have overcome the world." And in Hebrews, here 12, verse 7, we're told to endure hardships as discipline. God is treating you as sons, and I put in daughters. "For what son is not disciplined by his father? It is through hardship that we learn to look at circumstances from God's perspective." And it's hardships that help our faith and trust in God grow stronger. It is hardships that teach us to go on in confidence and strength that God gives us. And it's hardships that make us appreciate the more pleasant times. You could add to that list, but hardships can show us, at least in my case, just how much nothing I am apart from Christ. Yes, I know that as an oxymoron, but true nonetheless. Somewhere in my journey, and I'm not sure just when, I concluded in my mind that God only allowed the accident that took John's life because he knew he, God, could supply all my needs and all my family's needs. I was almost 36 when I unexpectedly experienced losing my husband, my helper, my friend. And that is the title of the story, my story, in this book, Shared Burdens, and which was written by Sue B. Schlebach and Glenn A. Roth in cooperation with Sharing Programs. This book was published in 1993, 12 years after Don's death. Sharing Programs was a Mennonite insurance and investment company, which today is known as Everence. They had asked me to speak at their annual meeting one year, and also asked if they could put my name on their list for speakers for Mutual Aid Sunday. So for several years, I would speak at various churches and share my story on or around Mutual Aid Sunday. This book is a compilation of real life stories of people who had suffered some kind of loss or other hardship and received help from their Mennonite community. They used my notes to write my story on 6 pages in this book, 6 whole pages, and starting on page 42. And I read it before I started to prepare for this time today. And there are a few minor discrepancies that do not detract from the actual story. For example, my back door does not have a doorbell. And they had to knock when they came, and the story, it says they rang the doorbell. But they were taking the notes and the things I had shared, and I probably didn't mention if it was a doorbell or if it knocked. I just probably said someone was at the door. And you know, that's, you know. Anyhow, so they had to ring the doorbell when they came with the news that would change my life forever. I was married to Donald Martin in 1965. We had 16 years and 8 months and 16 days of married life together. God blessed us with these 5 children. Don had his own Mason business, and I worked part-time as an accountant. In 1980, the construction business started to slow down, and likewise, the Mason business did as well. And he told our employees that if they can find other jobs, they should take them, because it seems like it's going to be slow for quite a while. And our employees went from 13 down to 3 at the time of his death. And Don took a part-time job with Four Seasons, working nights so that he would be home in the morning when the men came to start their job for the day. This photograph was taken 2 months before Don's death. The children's names and their ages at their father's death are starting in the back clockwise. Is my oldest, Laurel, was age 10. And Andre, he would be 7 in 12 days. Adonica was 4, and the picture was taken on her birthday. Dustin was 2 years and 10 months. Melita was 18 months old. Don was never too tired to play with or take care of the children. He enjoyed taking them along when he checked on jobs. One of our neighbors liked to tell the story of how Don redid her sidewalk one day, and he brought Adonica along when he when he was doing the finishing touches. And while he cleaned up and put his tools away, Adonica decided that she had been sitting on the porch long enough, and she took a stroll down the new sidewalk. And she said, all he said was, that won't do. He just had and picked her up, washed her feet off, put her some safe place, I suppose, and went back and finished the sidewalk again. And she thought that was so cute. The days that I did the payroll for the business and other book work, he would make supper, and he liked the tuna and potato casserole that I put in our Mennonite, Indiantown Mennonite cookbook. And he would often make it. And he'd tell the children that he was making snake meat for supper. And of course, they protested loudly, but we all enjoyed it. So that's a few tricks up his sleeve. Okay, this is our family 37 years later. The date there is 2018. And starting on your left is Andre. He works at, it was called Plain and Fancy. It's now Smokehouse Barbecue and Brew. And then me, and then my second son, Dustin, who works at Wolfson Construction as project manager. And his wife, Cheyenne, she works in mortgage company on computer web design and training sessions. And there are two boys. The one is Jaden, standing beside me. And Vander, my youngest grandchild, is being held by his mother. And then it's David, the tall one, is my son-in-law, David. My middle daughter, Adonica, and her two children, Lily and Tristan, in the front. Next to Adonica is my oldest grandchild, that's Arian. And he teaches, oh, I didn't say what David and Adonica. He teaches at the Lancaster City School District, and he teaches middle school social studies. Adonica, backing up now, she teaches in Lancaster City also. She teaches music grades K through 5. And her husband, Ben Hinder, is teaches college, Pennsylvania College of Art and Design. It is in Lancaster. Next to Arion is his father, Shazer. He works at Burke Tech as a manager, manufacturing fiber optic something. And his, my oldest daughter is Laurel. She's a CNA at the Zion Retirement Home. And then their daughter, Hattie. Hattie has, well, Hattie's been married. She was married on December 31, 1922. And she's married to Bradley Dumb, but he wasn't part of the family when this picture was taken, so he's not there. She works in a business in Honeybrook, and he, Brad works at Santander Bank. And then my youngest daughter's on the end, Melita, and she's a senior chemist at Lancaster Labs, and her husband Michael and her three children, Max, and the twins are Molly and Mason. So you can pray for us if we come to mind. I'm really thankful for my supportive family. And we're a family of mixed cultures, diverse backgrounds, various religious affiliations, differing political views, all bound together with love. I am also Mom Martin and Grandma M to these families. First families, Kenyan family, Joel Nabrama, he's the father there. He came to the U.S. through the IBET program for MCC, and he worked at Hinkletown School, and so we hosted him for half a year that year. So he came back 2 years later, went to go to college, met his Kenyan wife, would you believe, in college, and they were married, and they've been living in the area ever since. And so I'm their adopted grandmother. And then this family here, the Haitian family is Shazer's brother, Silas, his family. And they've been here, I would say, 5 to 6 years, but I think maybe it's closer to 10, because since they're here, a few others of the family have come. But they wait a long time. There's one more family they're working to get here, but because of the unrest in Haiti, they can't do their embassy meetings or anything, and they were cleared to come, but we don't have any idea when they're coming. So those are my extended family. One of the goals for our family was to raise our children to think globally. And Laurel was three yet when we had hosted our first fresh air child, first of many. And they'd come for the summer. And later we hosted college students, so during through the Christmas International Program through EMM, where the college students would come and live with us over their Christmas break. And then when my children went to Hinkletown School, we hosted several IWIPers like Joel. And so I think they're globally minded. But Joel did give me a compliment when he lived with us. This is back in the early 90s, I think. He said, "Mom," he said, "your family would fit well in Kenya." And he was telling us that then. And so, but he was there, saw a lot of different people come and go. And so he gave me that compliment. He really thought I should take time out and come and go over there someday and teach the ladies how to sew. never happened. Okay, and now to the journey. My journey as a single mom started on November 5, 1981, around 1:20 a.m. And as I mentioned earlier, Don had taken a job at Four Seasons. His idea was that he would work covering our living expenses, so without taking money out of the business, and so that when the construction business picked up again, he would be ready to go. And Wednesday evenings were usually short nights. And so he had gone off to work. Earlier in the evening, he called and said that he would be home late. The foreman's daughter had open heart surgery. Bob's daughter had open heart surgery that day, and he wasn't in yet. So he was going to stay and help the fellas load the trucks. Then he called me later and said, "Look, it's going to be around 1 or 2. Maybe you should go to bed." And I said, "No, I'll be up." Oh, the other time I said, I'll be fine. I'll have the coffee ready." This time I said, "No, I'll be up. I said, I'll go through the books you brought me from the library today." He'd get a stack of books. You know, where they had the racks outside the library door and paperbacks. And if you bring 6, you can take 6 home. Anyway, he would do that for me any old time. And I had looked through all the books and was about to put the coffee on when I heard a siren of an ambulance pierce the night. And that time, a heavy weight that would not go away for months just was on my chest, and I could not move. And the fire in the wood stove was going out, but I couldn't move. And after about an hour, the house was cold, and my prayer, and I sat there, prayed, "Lord, bring him home safely. Just bring him home safely." I had no idea why I felt this way. But then after an hour, and the house was cold, and my prayer changed. My prayer changed to, "God, help me accept whatever has happened. Just help me accept whatever has happened." And it was sometime after 3:30 or later when finally I saw cars were coming up the driveway. And I really tried to listen to see if he had taken the car or the truck, but I couldn't tell. Then I heard 3 car doors close. And then they were at my door, knocking. Well, I had to move. And I slowly, slowly went to the door and opened it. And there were 2 policemen at the door and our pastor. And my first words were, "Is he gone?" And they didn't say anything. They just came in and guided me back to the sofa where I was sitting for all a couple hours. And then I had to say again, "Is he gone?" You know, I was really desperate to know. And then they nodded and said, yes, there was an accident, and Don had died instantly. Well, what happened? And they didn't know yet. But there was another driver involved, I was told, and he had lived 2 hours. Well, did he have children? And they said, yes, he had two. Our pastor was Isaac Gaiman, my step-uncle, who was more like a brother to me than an uncle. And he said he would stay until I had notified the families, and or as long as I needed him. So the policemen gave me their condolences and left. And then I told Ike, well, maybe we better light the wood stove. I left it go out. And he did that. And then soon after that, the hospital called and wondered if anyone could come and identify the body. And he volunteered to do that as well. So God was already supplying my needs. First of all, I was glad I hadn't gone to bed and would have to be woken up with such news. And another way God provided was when the ambulance responded to the accident. Steve Martin, who later became our pastor at Indiantown, and who, with his wife Betty, had served as youth leaders with Don and I, and who hunted with us at our honey cabin, and who is Katrina Strawbridge's father, he was on the ambulance. And of course, he was helping the first car because the fellow was still alive. And then he walked over to the other car and recognized that it was our car. And he contacted the pastor, and he was able to come with the policeman. And meanwhile, the church family was praying for me already, without me knowing it. That day was mostly a blur to me. One of the first things I had asked the policeman and Ike was, how am I going to tell the children? And I did decide to wait until it was time for the morning milking before I called my mom and dad, when I knew they would get up. And then I called Dunn's family. And then one by one, the children woke up. Laura was first, and I told her all about it, and we cried together, and she said, Daddy said he'll see me in the morning. And I said, yes, that'll have to be a morning in heaven. And then when I told Andre, he got up next, and his response was altogether different. His face lit up. He said, Daddy went to heaven. And then I said, yes, but that means he's not coming back. And then he said, not coming back. Why? I said, I don't know. God needed him. And one by one, they woke up. And I dressed them, sent them downstairs, telling them there's lots of people here. They can go and find Papa and Nana. And so we started that day, which I thought would never end. I had a visit from two Pennsylvania state policemen from Troop J in Lancaster. They offered their condolences, telling me to let them know if I needed anything. And they came because the other driver was at Pennsylvania State Police. And he had just passed his fire marshal's exam. And months later, it was acknowledged in the newspaper that he had been driving under the influence of alcohol. Then there was an interview with a reporter from the Lancaster newspapers, a visit from the insurance adjuster telling me what they found in their investigation. And then we went to the funeral home to plan the funeral. And Later, they suggested they ought to take me to shopping to get a black dress for this funeral. And ended up being a black dress with flowers in it. And all this is, you know, bizarre, new, bizarre, you know, unbelievable. And it was the longest and the slowest day of my life. Okay. Yeah, this is one. Ah, there, what was right. Okay. Here's a Bible verse I really take comfort from. Elizabeth Elliot, if you listen to her, she's written a book with the title Secure in the Everlasting Arms. And she often uses this verse in her radio programs that she recorded. The eternal God is your refuge, and underneath are the everlasting arms. Deuteronomy 33:27. The eternal God is our refuge. Refuge means shelter and safety. And we can always go to God for shelter and safety. And underneath are the everlasting arms. Yes, we need shelter and safety, but we need those everlasting arms as well. Those everlasting arms give us strength to stand when we have none. And they guide us when we have no idea where to go. And they give us comfort and love by holding us close. That night, after that long, slow day, I was exhausted, discouraged, confused, and very much nothing. I threw myself into bed and said, God, what can you do with half a person? I immediately and literally felt those everlasting arms wrap around me. I knew I had nothing to fear. I had a good night's sleep. And every night after that, I had a good night's sleep knowing the everlasting arms were surrounding me. Someone had said to me recently, you accepted it so well. My response was, it could have been so different, but God had prepared me. And I've tried to give you a very brief insight into how God prepared me for this time in my life. This is just a little bit of it, but he prepared me, and he does to all of us, for what's ahead, and we don't even know it. But when I was almost three, I lost my father. And my aunt tells me to this day that I talked about him for at least a year. Dad and I did this, and Dad and I went here, and Daddy and I did this. And then, so I claimed God as my father, since my father wasn't there. And I told God everything. I told him all the good stuff that happened and all the bad stuff that happened. And my mother then remarried about 6 years later, and I had a wonderful new father. My grandfather also lived close to us in those early days, and he spent lots of time with my younger brother and sister and me before we moved on the farm. After Mom remarried, we moved on the farm. I had given my heart to Jesus when I was 13, and 2 years later, my grandfather suddenly died from a heart attack. And I became a person filled with righteous indignation, I called it. I was an angry person. Then Satan would harass me. How can you be a Christian and be so angry? Maybe you aren't saved. And I had a turbulent time during those teen years. And I decided I would never marry. I was too angry, and marriage wouldn't work anyway. And in addition to that, I had taken a test in my first year in high school that said that I valued my security more than I valued love. So marriage wasn't for me. But during that time, I met Don, and he didn't have an angry bone in his body. Nothing made him angry. It was strange to me. And by the time I was married at 19, somehow he and God had changed my mind. I made my peace with God sometime in there. And I knew I could trust God through anything. And that he really did love me. Even though he gave me a terrible temper, green eyes, hair that wouldn't behave. And he doomed me to live a life of being a girl. But I knew I was made in God's image. And he got angry. So I believed that he understood my anger. I had confidence that he understood. And I repented and I was sorry. But however, I did not realize or understand that my anger was one of the stages of grief until much later. Our Sunday school class would go to Black Rock Retreat in the fall when we... one year, a lady from Virginia was there, I don't remember her name, and she talked in the five stages of grief. And they are, in case you're wondering what those five stages are, they're denial, bargaining, depression, acceptance, and anger. And I found out it was normal. And what a relief. I actually am normal. Anger is part of what I was going through because I believe I had to work through my father's grief for my father and my grandfather all together. And I believe those 10 years of questioning and struggle prepared me for Don's death. I didn't have to be an angry mom when my children needed me. In addition to that, Don had lost his mother before we were married. And we both had learned that life was precious and that we should live each day as if it's our last. We had God prepared us that way as well. So, what is encouragement? I like the verse in Hebrews here, verse 24, and then 25 is good too. It says, now let us consider how we can spur one another to love and good deeds. So spur on, I think it what you should say. I didn't type that right. Well, anyway, let us not give up meeting together as some are in the habit of doing, but let us encourage one another and all the more as you see the day approaching. And God sent an army, I would call it an army in those days, and I still do, an army of people to encourage me and to spur me onward. Twice, David says in the book of Psalms, his faithfulness reaches to the skies. It's God's faithfulness. Those words are found in Psalm 36:5 and in Psalm 57:10. That is my testimony as well. God's faithfulness and the encouragement I received from many, many people certainly spurred me on and are the success story to my journey. And I will share about some of the ways I was encouraged, but keep in mind this is only a drop in the bucket, so to speak. I've been on this journey for a while, and I could never tell you in a short time here everything. But I divided the encouragement into four groups of people. I should have had five. I should have included neighbors, but I put neighbors in with my friends and things. So I divided them in four: family, church family, friends, and unknown friends. And this is encouragement from family. One of the first things my mother said to me that first morning was that maybe she had to go through the loss of a husband so that she could help me. And that's how God was preparing also. Well, she was a faithful encourager and a helper. And she set up a schedule so that someone stayed with me every school night. I had an adult to talk with after the children were in bed. And I had someone to help get the children, school children, off to school in the morning. I never had to worry who was coming. They just came. Sisters, aunts, mother, mother-in-law, anyone who wanted to come. Also, my mother never left us to forget a birthday. We had so many celebrations to do after Don's death, and I never felt like celebrating, but we celebrated. And then some of the other family helping hands were Don's cousin, Lisa, who was a nurse at the Effort Hospital, worked nights. And she would come on Wednesday mornings and read to the children that were still at home while I took a leisurely shower and washed my hair. It's one time I didn't have to be in the shower 5 minutes or 2 minutes, and someone yelling, Mom, we need you, come, you know. Papa and Nana Martin came every Sunday morning around 8 to entertain the children while I got ready for church. They knew that until I got ready for church, they wouldn't be ready anymore, probably. And then I had my sister-in-law, Marilyn. She would write my thank you notes for me to the newspapers and businesses and people that reached out to us. And then I had a 17-year-old cousin. He worked for Don sometimes in the summer. And he just took it to heart. He's a policeman now. But anyhow, he took it to heart. And he would come and play with them once a week. Read to them. He'd read this story. Oh, there's a Jerry, read it right. Oh, he said, you know. And read it right, Jerry, you know. And so he was just wonderful with the kids. He could also replace a light bulb and fix other things around the house. And then there were many prayers, many meals, and lots of babysitting. That was done for me. My church family not only prayed for me, they did anything that needed to be done. And I'll just list a few of them. Someone worked the garden with the rototiller. They helped, came, a whole bunch of them canned grape juice. It was done before you even knew we were going to do grape juice. They would babysit, or sometimes he took the children for a day while I did income taxes. Three of the ladies took me shopping for a new Easter outfit the first Easter. And then my Sunday school class paid for my, quote, babysitter, laundry folder, and house cleaner to come an extra day each week. And some trimmed the fruit trees and the grapevines. And they also included me in couples activities. And I went. I was in the state of mind I wasn't in. I had no way of deciding, should I go, shouldn't I go? I just told God, if it suits me, I'm going to say yes to everything. And they had invited me, and I went. And so that was tremendous encouragement. Okay, I missed one here. There we go. Okay. Friends. Friends were always near, always creative. One of my neighbors on that first morning, she was past retirement age, and she came that first morning and looked around and said, oh, what can I do? I must do something, she said. And then she says, I know. I'm going to rake your leaves. And she goes home, gets her bags for leaves and a rake. She raked all the leaves under my big maple tree. During different times, she would come over, just pop in the morning and say, hi, I came to wash your dishes. She'd wash the dishes and be out of there. No time, you know, just come in, wash the dishes, go. Another neighbor was even older. And she said, Anna Ruth, I can't lift children very well, but I can sit with them while they nap. so you can pick up your work. And I worked for a company on Farmersville Road, and once a week I would go pay the bills and do the payroll, and then I'd bring all the work home and finish it at home. And she was a perfect solution. And that same company I worked for offered me their company car to use until I get another car. Now, this offer of help was like most offers of help. They were offering it before I even realized I had a need. I hadn't even thought that far that six of us would not fit into the truck. But they did. They gave me the company car. One dear friend sent me a Thinking of You card every week for a year. Can you imagine that? And she still does it on special occasions or no occasions, whenever she thinks of me, I guess. And it's just mind-boggling to me. An employee of ours opened up a trust fund at the bank for the children's education. And then I had my attorney friend living next door, and he would gently remind me that, Anna Ruth, we need to close the business. And I'd have to agree, but it was so hard, one of the hardest things I had to do because it was so final. A friend who I worked with at John Souter Auto Company when I graduated from high school offered to pick me up and take me along to a Christmas dinner for county elected officials with him and his wife. And I remarked that maybe, while we were traveling, I remarked that maybe I should buy a car like this. It was very similar to the one I had. And he says, well, I'm getting my new car next week. This one will be for sale. What an answer to what could have been a car buying nightmare. I hate to buy cars. And when my pears were ripe the following fall, a good friend came with several more baskets of pears from her tree and two neighbors. And those two elderly ladies peeled pears all morning. And two of us had lots of canned pears till we were finished. And one friend bravely told me about a lost seminar that EMM was having and offered to go with me if I wanted to go. And like I said, do my frame of mind, I was not able to make decisions. So I told her, if she thought it'll do me good, I'll go. And I went. And it was only like 3 or 4 weeks after Don's death, my loss. But her act of kindness, giving up her whole day to sit through a seminar with me, is what really began my healing process. Up to that point, I was focused on my pain, terrible pain. And just to put one foot in front of the other and to do things without being able to think or plan or anything, you know. That was my focus. And there in that one room at Salonga, at EMM, big room, conference room, it was big tables all around, I was surrounded with others that had suffered great losses. The loss of a child, loss of a business, a loss of a farm, a loss of a friend. And list went on and on. And this got me to look at my situation through God's perspective. His business is helping everybody. And he was helping me, that's for sure. So, and then the last group is many people spurred our family on and remain unknown. There were those who contributed to the trust fund that was set up for our children's education. Don't know who they are. I learned later that all the employees at the Effort National Bank contributed to the fund instead of having their usual gift exchange at Christmas. People we did not know would knock on our door with a meal. And the Lions Club of Effort brought a huge box of toys at Christmas time. The Bergstrass Elementary School teachers took up a collection at school and presented us with a monetary gift. And people would knock on the doors and gifts or envelopes with money in them. And the children would answer the door and they'd say, "Give this to your mother." And by the time they gave it to me, they were long gone. So we didn't know who it was. They didn't know, and I didn't know either. Then there was many kind words said. You know, at the first PTA meeting I attended as a single mom, someone said to me, "Your presence here tonight is encouraging us all." And I just went because I thought, this is my job, you know, this I must do. You know, it's kind of like putting one foot in front of the other. And then she tells me, I was encouraging them all. Another neighbor wrote me a note, now I know this neighbor, that jolted me into reality and said, "I am blessed to see your smiling faces you drive by." Really, I'm smiling. And they notice when I drive by, you know, this is just all new to me, that I was kind of like, couldn't do anything. Couldn't do anything without being seen. And so those were just some of the many, many, many blessings that God showered on us. Now I look back in all these blessings in humility and love, just as I did on my journey. It is a humbling thing to know that so many people love us. It taught me, and I think it taught my children, that there is a lot of love in this world. Any person we met could have been someone that has blessed us with kindness. It's one of those unknown people. So we could look at everybody and think of them as loving us. Yes, there were definitely hard times. There were definitely hard times. It took a long time for my brain to heal from the shock. I needed many Be Kind Anna Ruth days. And the children needed to learn to trust in me as their only parent, also to trust in God. But God is faithful, and He really taught us a lot. And this picture represents to me how much we learned to trust God together. This is the beginning of a 6-week trip to California and back. And no one ever worried if Mom was lost. And that was quite a traumatic when we first had to go away with Mom all the time. Do you know where we're going, Mom? Yeah. Are you lost? No. Are you sure this is right? The car's making a funny noise, you know, things like that. We went that whole 6 weeks and no one worried. By this time, they knew we could trust God wherever they were. That was what we lived in and drove for 6 weeks. And so it was encouraging. That was one of many camping trips. Now, I will say this. If we had never camped before, I probably would have never done anything like that. But it was Don's dream. One of his dreams was to, he would say, as soon as they're all fit to travel, we're going to go take the summer off and go to the West. Meaning, when they're fit to travel, no more diapers, probably. But so we did this for him. And I had started homeschooling Andre that year, and we were doing the history of the United States of America. So we planned this all before we got. He would figure out how many miles we could drive every day, and we'd all have input of what we wanted to stop and see. And we budgeted our money. We knew where we're going to camp most of the time, except for national parks. They wouldn't take reservations. But we had a wonderful time, and we did it twice. And we did a few other trips as well. But God was faithful, that we knew this time. And I didn't mention doing, I just thought of it now. During this time, this was our first trip west, our engine died on us in California. And we, one of the suggestions was, well, just sell the thing and fly home. That's what they said we should do. And I said, I can't do that. I have 6 children, you know, and all our luggage and stuff. Anyway, God worked it out. Many, many miracles had happened. We cut out a few things, and we could not go to Glacier National Park where Paul was in CPS, and he had told him what to look for when we get there and all this and that. So we get home, and they tell Paul that we couldn't see Glacier National Park. And he said, well, you can go out when we do it in 2 years. We have an annual reunion in 2 years. You can go then. And they all said, yay! So they weren't tired of that 6-week trip. Anyway, God was really with us in all of our experiences there. So this is, I just forgot about that. Okay. I was going to close with Psalm 57, and I see I got the wrong presentation up here. I noticed as I was going, I had some things that weren't written down, so I pulled up the wrong one. I wanted to close with Psalm 57. Psalm 57, maybe again on my phone. I had it put on my notes. I memorized Psalm 57 when I was 57. And because Purpose Magazine, our church paper, recommended that everybody should memorize the psalm for their year. And I was glad I wasn't 119 years old. But this has 10 verses, and I will admit, it took a whole year to learn those 10 verses. It wasn't as easy like it used to be, and that's why one of the reasons I did it was to see if I could still memorize like I could. Okay. Is there a Bible around? I could read it. Well, anyway, it says, do you have it on your phone? I was thinking it on.
I'm talking too much to concentrate.
Thank you. This is, when I memorized this, I had no idea what Psalm 57 said. And it just touched my heart, and it's been one. I thought I could say it from memory, but I cannot. I get all the verses all mixed up. Okay. Okay. This says, be merciful. Yeah. I was doing it in the NIV, but this is great. Be merciful to me, O God, be merciful to me, for in you my soul takes refuge. In the shadow of your wings I will take refuge till the storms of destruction pass by. I cry out to God Most High, to God who fulfills his purpose for me. He sends from heaven and saves me, He will put to shame him who tramples on me. God will send out his steadfast love and his faithfulness. My soul is in the midst of lions. I lie down amid fiery beasts. The children of men, whose teeth are spears and arrows, whose tongues are sharp swords. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens, and let glory be over all the earth. They set a net for my feet, for my steps, it says. And my soul is bowed down. They dug a pit in my way, and they have fallen into it themselves. My heart is steadfast, O God, my heart is steadfast. I will sing and make melody, this says here. Mine said music. Awake, my soul. Awake, O harp and lyre. I will awake in the dawn. I will give thanks to you, O Lord, among the peoples. I will sing your praises among the nations. For your steadfast love is great to the heavens, your faithfulness to the clouds. My verse says sky. Be exalted, O God, above the heavens. and let your glory be over all the earth. So thank you for listening, and I will take some questions now.